enough subsidies to renewable energy, to electric vehicles, climate adaptability, then we are basically reaping what we sow. And we have to be connecting these dots, because whenever you hear the sort of media coverage about these disasters, they're covered as one-offs, as isolated incidents, that here's this devastating fire, we were praying for you, you'll survive. Look at the community spirit. I don't want to have to just survive. I don't want to have to rely on community spirit and my neighbors and GoFundMes to figure out, where I'm going to be living next. I want my tax dollars to go towards taking care of me, my community, and all of us being together. So we need a cultural shift in our country, away from thinking individualistically about the biggest car we can drive and the ways in which we can protect ourselves, without thinking about how we protect our community and how we're all in this together. So we have to fight for control over our budgets. We have to fight for control over the priorities that we make, pouring them into climate resiliency and adaptation, and ending the stranglehold of fossil fuels over our country and our world. We have to change that cultural mindset, and we have to push our politicians to do the right thing. And billionaires should not exist.
We have to leave it there right now, but we will certainly continue to cover all these issues. Sonali, it is hard to wish you a happy birthday, but on your landmark birthday, we're thinking of you. Sonali Kahatkar, evacuated host of Rising Up with Sonali, and also John Valiant, the author of Fire Weather. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
New Year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported KBOO during our Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. With the help of our community, we were able to reach our $75,000 goal, and we'll be able to continue bringing you grassroots, independent community radio. If you didn't get a chance to contribute during our year-end campaign, you can still support KBOO by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give and join the team.
This show is a rebroadcast from June of 2023.
Good morning. This is Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. My guest here in the studio is Jeff Strang from Common Ground, talking about land ownership and wealth and taxes. Jeff, thanks for being here.
A pleasure, Lisa.
This is going to be crunchy, okay? I want to talk about stuff that seems incredibly boring, but it's really the root of inequality in our society in a lot of ways, okay? It actually goes to the heart of how our society is divided, and also where real power resides, like they said on Game of Thrones. So, Jeff Strang, Common Ground. They're think tank people. You're thinky people over there at Common Ground. You've been working on a brochure to educate people about taxation. And when I read it, all I could think about was the inequality we see around us in our town every day. So can I start out and ask you, talk about the organization Common Ground. What does it do? And how did you get involved?
So Common Ground, Oregon, Washington is a chapter of Common Ground USA, which works on land value taxation issues. So talking about who owns land, how much they pay for that privilege, and what a better economic framework for society is with regard to land ownership. So you might think about here in Oregon about the Oregon Trail and all the European American settlers that came out. Well, yeah, it's nice and romantic, but that displaced all the Native Americans, and we had laws that excluded African Americans and Chinese Americans and later Japanese Americans from owning land.
Yeah, I mean, talking about taxes, and I did just get my taxes done, and it was really kind of traumatic. It's almost like it's a game, right? Just taxes. But you're talking with you have this think piece that you've been working on about the kind of ways that taxes could be done differently to actually spread wealth in our society. And, you know, the top story in Portland today is the city council bans daytime camping. You might think that people camping on the sidewalk or camping in public doesn't have anything to do with taxes, but it kind of does. So talk about this new piece that you've been working on. It's called Common Ground for Oregon, Residents Dividend, funded by a land value tax. This is fascinating. Jump into it.
So the way we normally think of property taxes in the U.S. is the land value and the improvement value, or the building value, is lumped together. But really, they're two separate things. They're like apples and oranges. And it really makes no sense to treat them the same, because what we want to see more of is improvements on the land so that we have housing, more housing, or more use of land, especially where we have that infrastructure that provides for human use of improvements and buildings. So we don't want to tax that so much. We want to see more of that where zoning allows us to create more structures and house more services for people. And on the flip side, though, what we don't want to see is taxation on land being too small, because that allows unearned wealth accumulation on the part of landowners. And landowners tend to be those with capital or access to it, which tends to favor more the white Americans and disfavors African Americans, Native Americans, and that people of color.
So actually, in this piece that you've been working on, you're actually proposing something specific, and you're looking at, like, in Alaska, where residents get money. I think all the residents of Alaska get money every year through a tax on the oil industry. You're basically proposing that this would be, and if we did something like this in Portland, it would be almost like a tax on the land, but not the buildings. Do I have that right?
That's right. Yeah. So in Alaska, they have a permanent fund. They put a tax on oil extraction. And if you think of natural resources in a place, that's really ideally under the control of we the people. But the way things tend to be is that the capitalists tend to use natural resources for their own enrichment. So ideally, what we want to see is a fair tax on natural resources and land that goes back to the people. And that's what Alaska does in part. They use the tax on oil production, and they give it out as a residence dividend every year. So in Oregon, this proposal would tax private land ownership and share out that increased taxation with all the Oregon residents, so that people can afford and to pay for market rate rents. Homeless would have more money for possibly renting a place and getting off the streets. So this proposal would put an additional 4% per year tax on privately owned land, and then that would go into a fund that would give every Oregon adult resident $2,000 a year and every child resident $1,000 a year. So a family of four, two parents and two kids, would get $6,000 a year, which really helps with rent and housing.
If you're listening right now, I'm Lisa Loving. We are keeping it real. Our guest live in the studio is Jeff Strang, and he's working with a nonprofit organization called Common Ground, basically to share ideas about our systems, how they work and how they don't work. And I mean, I bet there's a lot of people out there who are like, no, I'm going to the Starbucks sip-in later, and there is going to be a wonderful community calendar at the end of this. But no, really, I love this kind of approach to just how we think about the inequality around us, because I personally find that when it comes to taxation, when it comes to regulation of land and property and how the municipalities and government entities relate to that, there's so much disinformation, there's so much manipulation that hits so many of us so hard, but we don't even have the tools to see it. We just instinctually know there's something wrong. And so when Jeff comes over and he shows up, he starts talking about, well, in Alaska, everybody gets a check from the oil dividends. In Portland, you know, property speculation is a mother load for rich people who live all over the world, man. We got to get somebody in here to do a show about that. And so looking at the dirt under the buildings is actually not at all unlike looking at the oil industry in Alaska, which fascinates me. And when you, Jeff, say, you know, well, if they did a 4% tax, that means that everybody would get a couple thousand bucks. And in my head, there's just an explosion of thought. Like, well, this is, some people are talking about having a regular guaranteed income. Other people, you know, in society say, no, they have to earn it. And I can imagine that if somebody came out with this idea that we need to put a very modest tax on the dirt under the buildings, that there would be people who would say, But those people getting a check, they don't deserve it. They didn't do anything. Can we go back to that issue of why is there wealth concentration with people that have real estate? They're people with real estate are earning money that they didn't really earn. Talk about where that comes from.
Right. So when you own a piece of land, the value is based on essentially what's around it. Originally, when there was the Oregon Trail and people had farms, there was intrinsic value in land ownership, you know, if the land was fertile or not fertile. And so you could grow crops on the fertile land, and so that land was more valuable than, say, mountainous land. But as we've densified into cities and everything, the highest value land is in city centers, where there's a lot of infrastructure. There's big sewers and water lines and electricity and public transit, transfer stations that bring a lot of people around. So the value of a piece of land is mostly determined by what's around it. If you're in a slum, that land value is determined by what's around it. If you're in a wealthy area, that land value is determined by what's around it for the most part.
My head is just exploding with thought. If you're listening right now, yeah, we're talking about taxes, but again, Common Ground, this organization, on their website, there's so many, they call them papers, people talking about issues. It's a great place to become more educated about the dynamics of our taxation systems in the United States. And this constant insistence that rich people did something to deserve getting all that money. I don't mean to be rude. And you know, what is rich? You know, rich people got rich, I guess. But, you know, what is rich is kind of a relative term in a way, but sort of not. And again, the big headline for today is the mayor of Portland, the Portland City Council, basically banning daytime camping on the sidewalk. You know, I'm on my way over here this morning. I live in the Sumner neighborhood. We don't even have damn sidewalks, y'all. So it's like, I feel like sometimes even trying to get people up out of our Barco loungers to be active in all the different movements we're going to talk about at the end of this show. It's hard to cut through the cheese, if I could just put it like that, to even understand what is the bald-faced reality of this stuff. And we're faced with, I think, through our, you know, our daily media or what have you, we're faced with these things that are considered to be absolute reality, but they're not. Like, in other words, rich people did not necessarily do anything to make that stuff valuable. And that's why property speculation in our region is so awful, right? And again, I know I wanted to go over a little bit. Just this morning, of course, I got out of bed. I saw all kinds of stories about taxes, relative taxation, and how many parts of our society are impacted by the way we do taxes. And so climate change, right? Bill McKibben's newsletter this morning, he's talking about a new study that shows that the Inflation Reduction Act that the President Biden passed last year does not depend entirely on tax credits to fight climate change. Like, climate change is impacted by this. Like, how do we tax things? How should we tax them? Should we not? There's also rich people getting richer was a ProPublica email that I got this morning. How do rich people get richer? It's almost entirely through tax shelters. And ProPublica has, they cover this issue a lot, but I don't really hear a lot of people talking about what Elon Musk did to be so rich, but a lot of it has to do with the way he's, the shell game of his taxes. Part of the reason we don't talk about this more is that it's hard to understand. It's not meant for us to understand. And the other thing, the last thing I wanted to mention, the Urban Institute sent out an email this morning, how eviction affects neighborhoods. Now, I mean, this one, I want to linger over it for a minute because it goes to exactly, Jeff, what you were just talking about. Like when property speculators come and they're able to get, a $10 million loan from the bank to buy 20 houses, but an African-American family can't even get a $100,000 loan to buy one house. That's what I'm talking about. And this is the history of redlining. This is the history of our region. But, I mean, this is like a big bubble, but I want to look at you, Jeff, and say how many aspects of civil rights in our society could be impacted by this simple idea that you're sharing, just a tax on the dirt under the buildings, and then we all share that.
Right. And one interesting effect is because in economic terms, land is inelastic. Land value is inelastic. It doesn't follow the same supply and demand rules as products or goods. So the land supply is pretty much limited. We're not making new land.
They're not making, except in Hawaii, whatever, but yeah.
Exactly. So the price or the value depends on the demand. And where you have a place where there's historic demand, the land price increases. And so here in Oregon, since the late 90s, when we had the current property tax scheme, limited property taxes, we've had a land value increase of 6% a year for the past 25 years. And that's all unearned. That's because of demand for land in a desirable place, such as Portland or Oregon. And so a significant tax on land, a reasonable tax, a higher tax on land, for example, 4%, on top of the existing property taxes, which is effectively 1% of market value, that would keep land prices stable and low so more people could afford to own, such as young people that want to own a house or
houseless people who want to pay rent for an apartment. Yeah.
Well, that dividend would help the houseless people pay for an apartment, but more the people who want to have security of tenancy and have a place of their own. Everybody needs, every resident of Oregon and Portland needs a place to sleep. And what is the basis of a place to sleep? You need to sleep on land. People tend not to own boats and sleep on the water.
There are a few that do, but still, just the point, though, that you're making. Yeah. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in the studio with Jeff Strang. He's talking about this fascinating piece of writing he's been working on for the Common Ground website, which is, it's a thinky thing. It's like, how do we look at the world around us? Common Ground actually looks at a lot of, people call them white papers, but they're like different perspectives on taxation and finance in our country. And I have to say this about Jeff Strang, too. He's an activist in a whole bunch of different areas. And are you still... Jeff Strang is actually a longtime member of the Portland NAACP. Are you still a member of the Environmental Justice Committee?
Yeah, well, provisionally, but I was promoted to acting secretary.
So
I have a lot I'm doing there, and I can't be involved as much in committees.
Right. So looking at Common Ground for Oregon, residents' dividend funded by a land value tax. For people who are listening to this, it may sound esoteric, but can you talk about how it could actually be done? Like, what is the process for pushing something like this?
So one thing I want to bring up first is in the Oregon Constitution, Article 1, Section 20 says that we should not grant privileges to one group of citizens of the state over other citizens of the state. But the problem is we grant privileges not only to a certain group of citizens of the state, but also non-citizens of the state. We grant the privilege of unearned capital accumulation to those with capital to own land. And that shouldn't be the case. So if there's a reasonable tax on land that keeps land values low and stable, then speculators leave the market because they won't see that unearned income increase, that unearned wealth increase, I'm sorry, on their land. So speculators leave, and that leaves the land more available to our citizens, Oregon citizens, to own, such as renters and homeless.
Mm.
So what this would do is, if you're a resident of the state of, say, 1 year or more, and you have, for example, an Oregon ID card, then you would get a share of the resident's dividend that would be harvested from a 4% tax on land value. And so that could be doled out monthly to help with rent, to help stabilize rents better. And the children would also get part of that. So Oregon families could have more affordable housing and pay for things like food, basic things like food. And you're not discriminating on the residents, on the Oregon citizens. You're also giving that to the wealthy people, sure, but the way that's harvested on the land, that is basically not letting certain Oregon citizens have privileges of unearned wealth accumulation that other Oregon citizens don't have.
I just want to hear people talking about this all the time now. It's blowing my mind because I love it when I hear of new ideas that make me look differently at the world around me when I'm going down the street. So if we put a 4% tax on, I'm just going to keep saying it, the dirt under the buildings, who would be paying the most right now? I mean, just in your opinion, I recognize that that's not necessarily part of your research here, but who would be hurt? Who would be hit the most by a tax like that?
Well, it would be the people that own land just for the land value increase. So I'll just tell you a little example. In my neighborhood, there was a developer that bought 4 lots, and he wanted to divide the lots in half and put up a house on each of the divided lots. So he bought 4 lots. They were the typical 5,000 square foot lots that you see in Portland. And so he asked for a zoning change. It was close to a commercial area. And so it was allowed that zoning change to allow each property to be split in 2,500 square foot lots or skinny lots. And then each one would be allowed to have a house built on them. So just that switch from the zoning of 5,000 square foot lots to 2,500 square foot lots, that doubled the land value, because each of those half lots was allowed to have a house built on it. So that was the value of the land, is to have a structure put on it or improvement allowed by the city. So that zoning change doubled his land value, but he's not paying significantly for that property value increase. He's just pocketing that extra value.
And in our society, we think that's good.
That's right.
That's actually what our municipal officials promote.
Mm-hmm.
Even when that is done by people that are like multinational corporations that don't live here, or even investors from other countries, which we've actually seen as a thing. Like, it doesn't even matter. So, Jeff, you're freaking me out, man. I'm Lisa Loving. We are keeping it real. Our live guest in studio is Jeff Strang. We're talking about writing and research he's been doing for Common Ground for Oregon, residents' dividend funded by a land value tax. And there's so many layers of why I love this. Because again, walking down the street in the city of Portland, Oregon, there's so many realities that we get hit with all the time. The poverty, the people who can't even live indoors. And if you've listened to this show, this is a new show. This is, I think, my 4th episode. You've heard me complain about how rich people are messing up our town. I don't mean to be a bigot against rich people. The rich are going to rich. And I'm riching about it right now. But Jeff, you used to be a building inspector. Like, what made you think about this idea in the first place? You must have seen so much crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, I used to be actually a housing inspector, and I also used to be a home inspector. But I do have building inspector certifications. But the interest that I have is in the economics. And I came from a background in college of mathematics and science, and so I'm interested in formulas that can help society be more equitable, and this is one of those formulas, an extra 4% tax on land value. And when you think of the normal way we buy land, is we get a loan from the bank to buy land and a house, of course, but a lot of it is the land. And as the land prices keep going up because people want to own here, then the loans have to keep going up along with that. And then the way the loans work is they have a maturity. So it's either 15 years or 30 years typically. And then after that time, you own the land free and clear. So instead of having people to get a big loan for buying land and pay a lot of interest on that. Instead, we can have a tax to keep that land priced low and affordable, so we don't have to get a big loan from the bank and then pay off the bank. What we do is we own that land and pay the back to we the people every year, and then through that we can fund a residence dividend. So instead of having land values high and we go to the private sector, the banks, for our loans, we keep the land prices low and affordable so more of our residents can own and have stability of tenancy.
That's just such a radical communist idea. So to have more people actually having a place to live or even owning a house. It's so funny because over the years, you'll hear the Fannie Mae Corporation, which I don't even know what they're doing anymore, where some of these mortgage companies or even elected officials talking about the need for more home ownership. And yet the whole system is stacked against more home ownership for everyday people. If you just tuned in, I'm Lisa Loving. This is Keeping It Real. We're live in the studio with Jeff Strang. We're talking about different ideas about how we could go about organizing our society and places to live. Coming up this morning, I'm looking for it, Akua Holt on COVID, race, and democracy. And later, there's going to be Jonesy, a special one-hour segment of Jonesy, where he's going to be talking to authors who cycled from the top of Alaska to the southernmost tip of Argentina. I've known some people that have done that. And then Words and Pictures is going to be about Pinocchio, crafting Pinocchio. That's the biggest thing going on at the Portland Art Museum right now. So definitely stay tuned for the rest of the morning. It's pretty exciting. And there are people calling in. And friends, listen, this is the hard truth I have to tell you. We need more engineers here at KBOO, right? We're not set up to take calls right now in this beautiful studio. And we need you and we need all of your friends to come over here and volunteer so that we can build out everything we do and we can have a lot more call-in talk radio. I would love to do call-in talk radio, but we need more people to volunteer here and be engineers. KBOO is a do-it-yourself revolution. Don't doubt it for a second. So back to this interview, Jeff. I think I asked you before, and I'm going to ask you, you know, later, like what you think is most exciting about all this. But what made you think about it in the first place? What gave you the first thought of turning this into an essay, an advocacy piece?
Well, I first got involved with the land value tax issue about 20 years ago. There's a long time land value tax activist named Jeff Smith who used to live here in Portland. And so I connected with him and got the information and got involved. So it's not intuitive. The way we think of private ownership of land is not intuitive. In fact, back in those days, 20 years ago or so, when I was thinking of becoming a property owner, I had to read the Oregon Real Estate Handbook that I got in the library to find out what our concept of private ownership of land is. All the listeners, I'm sure, know about the Native American concept of land and living on the land, and there was no concept of dividing off a piece of land and private people owning that. But in our European culture, coming from Europe, where the place was really dense, and we had to divide off the land to make it so society could work well, we brought that over to the U.S., that concept, over to the U.S. with us. And really, land is, as you brought up earlier, land and natural resources are really similar to the atmosphere and carbon. So we think of these things, the air, land and water as being commonly owned. That's the way it should be.
Because we can't put a fence around the air yet. We haven't figured out how to do that. Sorry, that was rude. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. That pollution from one part of the world is spread over into other parts of the world. So we can't put a fence up and keep dust from blowing in from China or the
wildfire smoke from Canada hitting on New York City. You guys, right. Don't be breathing that air. Put on some kind of mask and don't go outside. Anyway, mm-hmm. Jeff, as you're saying.
Yeah, or the dust from Sahara coming over to Brazil. We can't put fences around the atmosphere. So it makes sense to tax the use of common spaces as sinks for pollution. So a carbon tax is another one of those concepts that we stress at Common Ground. And water is a similar concept, how we use the fisheries. You know, we need to manage the fisheries so that they come back every year and they provide for all of us instead of private interests harvesting so much fish that they disappear, and then it's not good for the next generation.
You know, I have to say this is full disclosure. I have spent many years in genealogy messing around on ancestry.com. In my head, I think of it as deadancestors.com. And I've traced my family back like 13 generations, and we're hillbillies. We're just both sides of my families. We're just hillbillies going way back. But when people will talk about the first European ancestor that came over and la, 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 there's even a word for that as if it was a good thing. That was rude. I didn't mean to be rude. But the thing that strikes me is how many Europeans came to this country and got land by showing up, just mm-hmm. by showing up. Like, there's places all over the East Coast where there was these things called land grants, right? And it's so ugly when you look at it. It's ugly as sin. And I'm not even a Catholic, but people could show up with however, like, just one man or their family. And sometimes all they had to do was make it to a place, make it to an office, and sign a bunch of papers in some places, and they would get land. It was free, okay? Now, you could say that they were risking their lives to get there, but I'm still going to say they didn't have to buy it. And also, there's a plenty of places on the East Coast and also in the Midwest where if these folks, these settlers showed up and could cultivate a crop for 1 year or something like that, or cultivate a crop for 3 years or something, they would get the land. And I'm just still going to say free. Like, they didn't need capital. They didn't need a bank. I almost just made an FCC violation. Anyway, that's the part that really gets me. And when I'm strolling through your cool brochure, that I know we're doing a whole show about a brochure, but I think this stuff is really fascinating. And mm-hmm. it's like Jeff said, it's not intuitive. When I'm looking through this, it talks about keeping land affordable, security of tenancy. Now, we haven't even talked about that. Current landowners, real numbers. There's big segments of capital in our society that don't want us to keep land affordable. They don't want tenancy to be secure. Like, we have whole profit centers in our culture that make money from financial misery and poverty. I mean, I hate to ask this, but can you just talk about that a little bit? Like, what forces are arrayed against this idea of actually sharing the stuff, if I could put it like that?
Yeah, it's the owners of land and capital that want that that capital gains. So that's why we have so many rentals, for example, as opposed to home ownership, so that the rentals are not secure. The renters don't have security of tenancy because they're at the mercy of market rates, which tend to go up every year. So also homeless that can't afford a place. Part of that, a big part of that, is that money from the increase in wealth just goes into the pockets of people who can afford to buy, those with capital, or those who already own a significant amount of land. And now, this isn't to say that All the people that own land now will have their will owe so much that they can't live there anymore and have to sell. Because low...
That's what's already happening with the mortgage systems. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so low wealth, low income people, part of this proposal is they would be able to defer their land value taxes until their property is sold or transferred. So they can still have security of tenancy. They can live in the house on the land that they already own. But this proposal would keep that land value stable so that people aren't making money on ownership of land and natural resources. That's the concept.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say something nice about Willamette Week, so everybody get ready, okay? I have loved their series that they've been doing since last year about abandoned buildings, right? And so what they've been doing is all over town, I think in every sector of the city, they've done many profiles about buildings that and land that's not being used. And they're basically shaming the landowners, right? Fascinating. It's fascinating. Highly recommend it. There's a fancy name for it. I don't remember what it is. But they've done a couple interviews where they're interviewing separately from that project. They're interviewing people and talking about the constructing affordable housing and housing at all. And some of the people that they're interviewing are just complaining that they cannot make a big enough buck to make it worthwhile for them. Right. So this is literally Portland, Oregon has got to be one of the greatest centers of land speculation I've ever heard of anywhere. And yet there's still some people complaining because they can't get rich enough from it. When I look around where I live in the Sumner neighborhood, which is just this weird little slice of pie by the airport. I think I already mentioned we don't have sidewalks. It's gritty. And over in Cully, which is, you know, the neighborhood next door, I've seen a lot of beautiful affordable housing buildings going up. Amazing. NEA has built a number, actually, of incredible buildings. Hacienda CDC put up something amazing. Sabin CDC, I'm hugging you in my heart right now. They just developed a couple of buildings that have come online. Urban League of Portland opened the Hattie Redmond building. And so and Urban League in particular came out and said, you know, there's a lot of people that are getting money and making money from being developers, and we're thinking maybe we should bring something different to the table, and we should actually be developers for our own communities, which is amazing. Can you talk about a little bit, and maybe this is not your area of expertise, but what goes into, why do we even need to construct affordable housing?
Well, that's a good question. I think that this proposal would really help a lot in that direction. And the way we do it now is we think of affordable housing as something that the government should provide for people. So we're thinking of it in a different way than I think it should be thought of, because really you want to give people the tools to be able to have their own affordable housing themselves. It's not a problem that a landowner improves or makes a new construction. In fact, that's one of the things the city of Portland is looking at for, say, reducing the system development charges for new construction so they don't make people pay so much for improving their properties and putting more dwelling units on them, for example. But the construction of buildings and improvements, that's fine for people to do and make some money from that. Like you put up an apartment building and you make money from the rents. Sure, but the additional thing that we don't want to see is that profit making from unearned land value increase. You think about a vacant land downtown. So a piece of land that's just used for surface parking. That is very valuable land because of all the infrastructure and buildings around it that give it that value. And it's a waste to just have it be surface parking. You could put a parking structure on there or another kind of structure that would bring in income and use that land the way it should be used, ideally, because of all the structure around there. You're tapping into all the infrastructure around that. And it's a waste to have it just be a vehicle for wealth accumulation by the owner.
There's another building that the Willamette Week has written about a lot, and I don't remember what it's called, but it was owned by the Menashe family, and it's in Old Town, right? Or is it in downtown? And it's been an open-air fentanyl market for a couple of years. And in fact, this complex has been empty for, is it 30 years, Jeff? Like, I don't recall, I've lived here since the 80s, and I don't recall ever seeing anything in it ever, right? And so that was when, the Willie Week really hit them hard with their coverage of that, and they've had multiple stories about it. And for people, Jeff, what about action about this? These ideas, like for people listening right now, and they're getting hot, under the collar, like, what can people do about this?
Well, one thing that I'd like to do is initiative. So it would
a ballot initiative.
Ballot initiative that would change the constitution to allow this extra
the
tax
state
on
constitution.
Land. Exactly.
That would have to happen at the state level.
That's right.
And I know that you know a little bit about that too. Like, what would that involve?
Well, so we've tried going through the legislature, but for example, my progressive state representative wasn't interested in this because she owns land and she doesn't want to tax herself anymore.
Oh my God.
So really it should be a ballot measure so we get a lot of buy-in from especially renters and homeless people. And we don't really care so much about the people who already own land.
And I do want to say this. In the city of Portland, people that don't have a home can vote. I was looking everywhere during the last election cycle for anyone who was organizing unhoused people to vote. If there's anybody out there doing this, please contact me. My name is Lisa Loving, and you can find me on social media. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But this is a thing. Like, if you don't have an address, and probably most of the state, you actually couldn't vote. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Right. Yeah, there's got to be some way for homeless people to register as citizens of Oregon.
I think that's actually one place to even start for people who are thinking right now. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to run out of show because I want to read out my community calendar after we are done talking. But in the work that you've been doing here for Common Ground Oregon, residence dividend funded by a land value tax, what's the most important takeaway for everyday people on this work that you've been doing? What's the most important thing for people to know and to share with the people around them?
So we shouldn't make a profit on private ownership of nature and natural resources. That's the bottom line. It's for all of us in common. So we should have a tax on private ownership of those things that doesn't allow for unearned wealth accumulation. That's the bottom line.
I wish I had thought to find that old nursery rhyme about the commons and the rich man steals the commons. Anyway, there's a whole jingle about that. So, Jeff, for people that want to learn more about Common Ground Oregon, Washington, what should they do? Is that a place people can go and participate, or is it it's a thing that where people go and learn?
Yeah, it's mainly a place where people go and learn, and it's www.commongroundorwa.org.
All right. I'm wrapping up this segment of our show. This is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa. This has been our guest, Jeff Strang. Again, learn more about this work at commongroundorwa.org. org. And just hang out here for a few minutes. I'm just going to read for a while. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio is reemerging. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. And now I'm going to shift gears and say this is the KBOO Keeping It Real Grassroots Community Calendar for Portland, Oregon through June 30th. It's actually through like June 20th. Okay, today from 10 a.m. to noon, Starbucks Workers United, I'm like pointing at the air right now, Starbucks Workers United PDX Sip-In and Rally. Have you heard of these Starbucks Sip-Ins? It's hilarious. Starbucks Workers United PDX organizer Alicia Flores was fired. Come out to a solidarity sip-in Thursday, that's today, and a rally on Saturday. A sip-in is where people go to the Starbucks, everybody gets a drink of water, they get the free water, and then they sit at the tables and sip their water and give big tips to the staff. That's a sip-in. I love that. The rally on Saturday, June 10th, is at 11 a.m. It's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the McAdam Starbucks, 6080 South McAdam Avenue. Okay, also today, picket line in support of faculty unions at Portland State University. That's today from noon to 2 p.m. Stop the cuts at PSU, a crop from the top picket. That's at 1742 Southwest 6th Avenue in solidarity with AAUP and the PSU FA. Read more about it on the website psuaaup.net. Follow the links in the latest news field. So tomorrow, that's Friday, and thanks for people who wrote this one into me. Tomorrow, it's the Food Not Bombs book reading and fundraiser at Mother Foucault's bookshop. I'm messing with you right now. I'm saying Foucault because it's like a French word. So it's Mother Foucault, and that's tomorrow at... what is that? 5 o'clock. It's a book reading and Food Not Bombs fundraiser featuring author David Border Giles, reading from A Mass Conspiracy to Feed People, Food Not Bombs, and the World-Class Waste of Global Cities. It explores the ways capitalism simultaneously manufactures waste and scarcity. Fascinating. Also reading our local Food Not Bombs activists. Book sales will benefit Food Not Bombs. Okay. Also tomorrow, this is really cool. It's the Coastal Jam. Native Wellness Institute and North Clackamas Schools hold the Coastal Jam. It's from 5:30 to 11:30 tomorrow night at Milwaukee High School Main Gym. Five local indigenous families share their canoe culture. It's very specific. That's the Milwaukee High School Main Gym, 2301 Southeast Willard Street. There will be vendors and free dinner starting at 5:30. The jam starts at 6:30. Find out more about Native Wellness Institute and their events. They have a whole bunch of cool events at nativewellness.com. Okay, now, Coalition of Communities of Color. Join them online June 14th at from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. for a Zoom workshop on Portland Redistricting 101. I'm just a broken record on this. Our whole city is changing its structure, and it's a really big deal. And for reasons that I was talking with Jeff about, this can be an opportunity for everyday people to go in there and have an impact on what shape we harden into later. Your feedback is crucial to ensure the success of implementation, and districting is one important way you can make your voice heard now. So register for Coalition of Communities of Color. That includes the Urban League of Portland. It's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/districting101. Okay, Saturday, June 17th, from 6 to 8 p.m., the Class Struggle Action Network. This is what we talked about last week. Their cookout in the park has been moved. The new location, same date though, is Lentz Park. That's the Class Unionism Barbecue Potluck. You don't want to miss that. Class Struggle Action Network is going to be providing a barbecue grill, burgers, both meat and vegan, hot dogs, buns, and condiments. If you can, bring something to share, food or beverages. Children are welcome, and it's at the Picnic Area C near Southeast 88th and Schiller. This is a short walk from the Southeast Hullgate Boulevard Green Line MAX station and bus lines 17, 72, 10, and 9. Find out more online at class-struggle-action.net. I love that. Okay, this one's really cool. I know, I'm just super excited reading my calendar here. Word is Bond. Of course you've heard of them. Word is Bond Juneteenth tour of historic Lower Albina. Word is Bond is Lakayana Drury's Black Male Leadership Organization. They're continuing with walking tours of Portland created by and led by members of their programs who are aged 15 to 20 years old. June 19th at 1 p.m., I'm sort of pounding the table here, they're holding a tour of historic Lower Albina. This is not a free event, I believe. Proceeds from these tickets go to fund Word is Bond activities and operations. And listen, they're taking a group of local Black youth to Ghana this summer. It's the Black Star Homecoming Expedition. Check them out and send your support. Find more online at mywordisbond.org. Love them. Okay. Now, the Uprise Collective. You've heard of them, right? They've been around for years now. They're doing an online event that is really crucial. No One Left Behind: Disability Justice Means Disaster Preparedness. That's Tuesday, June 20th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. It's a Zoom workshop. It's a free Zoom workshop. No registration is required. The event will be recorded. Join community members with lived experience as we learn from one another strategies and practical skills for disaster preparedness from the disability justice community, okay? American Sign Language and captioning will be provided. I'm going to give you the Zoom ID right now, okay? Zoom ID for No One Left Behind: Disability Justice Means Disaster Preparedness. That's 881-3232-2977. They have a link tree, okay? So that's Linktree, linktr.ee/the Uprise Collective. If you have questions, you can email Etawi, E-T-A-W-I, at theuprisecollective.org. Please do. And remember, that's going to be recorded. That should be shared widely. Okay, and here's my last thing. It's a really good one. Applications are now being accepted for the Oregon Psilocybin Advisory Board subcommittees. I know if you're listening right now, you're totally on the mailing list already of the Oregon psilocybin bureaucracy that's emerging at the state, right? Because we passed this, right? The state's new Psilocybin Services Bureau is seeking applications for volunteers to serve on subcommittees of the Oregon Psilocybin Advisory Board. Subcommittees will consist of both governor-appointed board members and members who are appointed through an open application process. The Oregon Psilocybin Advisory Board will select subcommittee members during their August 4th meeting. You should find out more, and that's at oregon.gov/psilocybin. Listen, P-S-I-L-O-C-Y-B-I-N. You're going to have to learn how to spell psilocybin. That's easy for me to say. And the deadline is Friday, June 23rd. This has been the KBOO Keeping It Real Grassroots Community Calendar for the Portland, Oregon area through June 20th. Please send me your community organizing and engagement events for Portland, also Vancouver, Corvallis, and Hood River. I want to include them. This will be once a week. Try me on social media. I'm Lisa Loving on Facebook. I'm Lisa Loving on Twitter. And I'm L Loving on Instagram. In a direct message or a post, your stuff right to my Facebook wall. You can email me. I'm lisaloving33@gmail.com. And you should do it next week, too. You should always do it. You should be a grassroots radio activist. Find out how by emailing volunteer@kboo.fm. Stay tuned. And hey, thanks for tuning in today. I'm going to try to make the magic work. We're going to try to play you guys out. And thanks for being with us.
are listening to
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements.